Welcome to Evidence Based, a new Harbinger Psychology podcast. I'm your host, Cassie Stossel. On today's episode, we're talking about how to unwind without alcohol. Our guest is Dr. Rebecca E. Williams, author of Simple Ways to Unwind Without Alcohol. Rebecca is a psychologist, wellness expert, and award-winning author. She received her bachelor's degree from Williams College, her master's degree from Harvard, and her doctorate with specialization in clinical psychology from the University of California, Santa Barbara. Rebecca enjoyed a 20-year career as a clinic director with San Diego VA Healthcare System, was an associate clinical professor in the School of Medicine at the University of California, San Diego, and maintained an active private practice. She is co-author of two popular books, Bridging Addiction Recovery with the Power of Mindfulness. The Gift of Recovery is a pocket coach designed to strengthen recovery. The Mindfulness Workbook for Addiction is a go-to guide for understanding the relationship between moods and substance use. The workbook is now in its second edition and has been translated into multiple languages. Visit her website at www.mindfulnessworkbook.com. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Cassie. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. I think this book is really timely. I think a lot of people are trying to cut back on their alcohol consumption. But I wanted to start out by asking you why, especially in the book, you talk about how soothing the mind is the first step you'd recommend. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I'm biased a little bit. I'm a psychologist, so obviously my first go-to is the mind and trying to take care of your mental health. And so I did dive into that one first. We know that alcohol disrupts how you think and how your mind works. And so I wanted to be able to have people start off with trying to get our minds right. Alcohol, as you probably know, and your listeners know, affects how you make decisions. It impacts your mood. So there's a lot of things that alcohol does that's sort of like kind of invisible, and bringing it to the surface as we talk about the mind and how to calm the mind down and take care of your mind is kind of really what I'm all about, you know, in terms of getting us started on this journey together.
Yeah. And a lot of first steps people offer for working on this mind aspect is meditating or mindfulness. How can we make this less intimidating? And what are some of those benefits of meditation?
Really great question. Because I mean, some people do think that meditation is intimidating. Well, I like to start off small. That's the way I started off 20 years ago meditating. I just started off with 5 minutes in the morning. And really, the bottom line is just sitting on a cushion or in your chair or even lying down for 5 minutes and just breathing. I mean, inhaling and exhaling. And that's the beginning part of making it less intimidating. If you've ever taken a yoga class or Pilates class and you didn't know, you know, you've never done it before, it was your first time, it feels a little bit weird at first and intimidating. But once you go and you get that first class under your belt, then it feels kind of like, I want to go back. This feels pretty good. And I think it's the same thing with meditation. It's just kind of getting through the first couple times and making it sort of a practice that you do every morning or every evening is going to make a huge difference in how you think about stopping drinking or cutting down on alcohol. Do you meditate, Cassie? I mean, it seems like you might.
I've tried it. I really like a guided meditation because I'm not great with just sort of my own. Like when you talk about yoga class, I love when people tell me like what to do. But I have tried to add sort of little moments of mindfulness into like my day. Like if I'm drinking a coffee, I try to like tap into the senses instead of just mindlessly drinking it. So as far as like sitting down meditating, I'm pretty terrible at that, but I like sort of the random mindfulness throughout the day.
Yeah, I like that too. I agree with you. And you're probably not knowing this, but what happens when you do those mindfulness little techniques throughout the day, it reduces your stress. It can lower your blood pressure. It can improve your immune system, which we all need help with, and it can help with your sleep. So I think if that package of things is interesting to you, keep doing it, keep going and make it a part of each day.
Is there a sort of a place to start that you recommend for people with meditating? Do you recommend starting for 5 minutes or do you recommend, like if someone comes to you and doesn't know anything about it, sort of what path do you tell them to try?
Right. I do recommend small, simple steps with everything in life because it's a busy world out there. There's a lot going on. People are recovering from COVID and other problems. So I think keeping it simple is important. I like your idea of guided meditation. I think that's great. Even I have Pandora music, and I use a little music in terms of the background for my meditation. Mm-hmm. And I do it outside. I live in a warmer climate, so I can bring my little cushion to the outside, look at my garden, and do 5 minutes with music in the background. There's a ton of different ways. There's some great apps that are online that people can gravitate to if they want something a little more, you know, like you said, organized and specific. I do think there's a lot of fun things to be curious about out there.
Yeah. And I feel like we hear a lot about the inner critic, but what I liked in your book is you bring up the concept of the inner therapist. Can you say more about that and give some tips on how to access that part of your mind?
Yeah. I love the inner therapist. I mean, I do see the inner critic all over the place, and that word just bothers me. So I said, let me twist this around and make it more positive and more useful, at least for me. So that inner therapist is really that inner voice that you might have in your head that's really kind and supportive. There's obviously negative voices, we all have them, but there's also this maybe quieter voice that's really kind, considerate, says, you know, what do I need today to feel well? And that's the inner voice and the inner therapist that I want folks to kind of move toward, kind of get the pendulum swinging into the other direction. So you can ask yourself, what support do I need right now? What is it that I need to be kind to myself today? Offering yourself words of encouragement. For example, like saying, today I'm focusing on my mental health. Today I'm focusing on taking care of my body. Whatever the encouragement is, it's almost like your best friend in your mind going like, hey, you know, let's take care of you today. What do you need? And then following through with that. The key really is to follow through with what your inner therapist is recommending for you. And my book has a ton of ideas about how to follow through with that. So, it's just about being kind to yourself and making that inner therapist kind of the main thing you go to when you're having a rough day, especially around quitting drinking, where you might have some ups and downs, you know?
I like that, like tapping into your own wisdom to see what you need in that moment.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well said.
So you talk also a lot about social media in your book and how that and news can have an impact on our alcohol consumption. I think we obviously saw a lot of that during COVID. Mm-hmm. I know I found myself reaching for wine a lot more at the beginning of COVID than I was expecting, and I've never really been a big drinker. What are some ways that you recommend to sort of detox from these outside stimulus?
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. During COVID, I mean, the research shows that a lot of people reached for alcohol and drugs and a gambling addiction, you know, all sorts of stuff was going on during those last 3 years of stress that we had. And when you're on social media, you see other people having so much fun with alcohol, you think, hey, FOMO, I'm missing out on something, fear of missing out. So I better jump on the bandwagon and do what I see on social media. So there's a beautiful study out of Finland that really says that comparing ourselves to others has a negative effect on our mood. And Finland is the happiest country in the world, according to a recent research and data. So they really kind of take heart, and we should too, that comparing yourself to others on social media is definitely going to have a negative effect. So let's figure out how to decrease social media and how stressful it is to actually decrease social media and news too, very negative news cycles that are going on. So the way I think of it is like a couple steps. It's like, first you choose the amount of time you want to detox for. It could be a day, a week, a month. When I was teaching class at University of San Diego, the folks had a 28-day detox program that was part of the class that I was teaching on addiction recovery. And they chose all sorts of things. And the folks that chose detoxing from social media had a phenomenal outcome of their mood. They really did report really great stuff. So that's a 28-day thing. You do 30 days. You can do, you know, whatever you decide, just stick with it. And this is the tricky part, this next one. Let's see if we can get this one. Delete your apps. Ah, no, no, never. I won't do it. So delete your apps, your social media apps. You can always put them back on, right, Cassie? So
you saw my face when you said that.
Yeah. Don't worry. Don't. It's going to be okay, right? So you know, delete whatever you got, your work, the Facebook, whatever is going on. So just delete it for. I like 30 days. That's just a good number for me, but you decide. And then let your close friends and family know that you're going offline, so they're not freaking out and going like, where is she or where is he? Let them know I'm going to do a 30-day detox. I'm still fine. I'm still here. You know, you can text me. You can call me on the actual telephone, but I'll be offline for 30 days. This is where it gets really fun. You're going to have extra time on your hands. What? You know, so you're going to have between 2 and 3 hours a day extra, just a gift back to you. Mm-hmm. And so the fun part is, what are you going to do with that extra 2 to 3 hours? And I think that folks come up with really creative ways to get off their phones and get off the news cycle and transition to, I want to spend time with my cat or my friends, or I want to go to this new restaurant downtown, or whatever the thing is that you've been thinking about but haven't done because you've been scrolling in the evening. You may want to switch over and find some, you know, something fun that's going to fill up your cup and, mm-hmm. you know, and make you feel good. Replace your negative news cycle with positive stuff. David Burns has a website that says, this is the good news. It's a good news website, only good news.
I like that.
Yeah. And so he was on 60 Minutes and he mentioned that. And I thought, what a great idea to have just a good news website that you look at for some fun things. So, you know, there's steps to do. It's doable. Don't be afraid. You're going to be all right, but give it a try, right?
Yeah, I like that. I need to actually delete the apps. I currently don't get any notifications, which has helped like my pickups a lot. Like I would pick it up anytime I saw that. I forget what the name of the documentary was that came out a few years ago, but it was talking about like that dopamine hit that you get from mm-hmm. even just the notification. So I deleted those, but I struggle to delete my apps, but I think it would be good for me because I'm totally appalled every week when I get that like screen time notification.
Yes.
And you don't notice you're spending that much time. Like you said, you get hours back.
Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do with those hours? I mean, I don't know if you have anything that you've been wanting to do, but haven't done because you haven't had the extra time. But now, you know, this is going to be a good time to really reengage with your friends or, you know, or something that's going to make you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are all about feeling good.
Yes, we are.
We kind of talked about, or we did talk about the mind aspects. I want to ask a little bit now as we move into some of the body aspects. So what is mindful body work and why is engaging the body so important to soothe ourselves?
Right. Yeah, this is fun stuff to really kind of delve into the body a little bit more. When you're drinking alcohol, I don't know if we're always listening to our body when we're drinking on, say, a regular basis, even if it's a glass of wine a night or whatever it is for you personally. But the body is wanting to be well, and it needs extra support and help. And I think mindful body work is just a way to listen to your body, listen to what your body needs to be well, and try something that's going to help you feel good when you stop drinking. And the weird thing is that when you do stop drinking alcohol, and let's just say you get a massage, it's going to feel different than when you were drinking, or you went to a spa and they had champagne and massage at the same time. You know, this stuff happens. So not drinking is going to allow you to release some emotions that maybe you didn't realize were there. It's going to make you release some physical stuck points that you didn't realize you were there because you were maybe numbing out physically and mentally with alcohol. So it's pretty cool to try different body work techniques and see what happens. I'm actually going to be trying Reiki. I already do acupuncture, which is pretty incredible. And I'm going to add Reiki in there to just kind of get to keep healing myself and feel well. And I really, in the book, I say, think of body work as healthcare. If you can put your body work in that, this is my healthcare basket. I'm going to add a massage, acupuncture, something, chiropractor, something else good. That's your healthcare basket. And that's going to go a long way as you start feeling better without alcohol. So see how it goes, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, the body is so important in this area. Speaking of social media, I saw this TikTok about the Aura Ring. I have one. It's a sleep tracker. And this woman was talking about how even just like a glass of wine would interrupt her sleep. Like she would notice like her sleep score drop from not even like a big day of drinking, but a simple glass of wine. And so she decided to cut it out because she was noticing how that one glass of wine impacted her sleep. And I just thought that was so interesting because when you think of your body sort of negatively reacting to drinking, you think of like, I have to drink a lot. And then like, I feel like crap, but it like in little ways disrupts things that you don't even notice.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the invisible disruptors that you don't even realize are happening. And having a data point, like an Aura Ring is really helpful to track how you're sleeping and how you're doing. And I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And one part of your book too, that I really resonated with just because especially during COVID when I was sitting at home looking around, I was feeling so much anxiety about clutter. If I was looking at clutter, it would just physically make me feel anxious. And you talk about that this mess in our home can mess with our minds. What are some ways that we can address that and reduce the stress in our physical surrounding?
Yeah, we could spend a whole hour talking about clutter and trying to decrease clutter. I mean, and get our homes back together. See, I think of the home as your sanctuary, your healing sanctuary. And if we can think of our home that way, in a respectful way, the process already starts. In other words, you start to slowly take pieces of your home and start decluttering. So the home is a place where you're actively healing every day. And that's how I think of the home. And so when you come home from work or you're at home all day working from home, which a lot of folks are, is your home helping you heal from not drinking and starting to feel better? Or is it adding to the stress? And like you said, I have too many things around, you know, it's stressful. So it's important to look around your home kind of as a neutral observer and see, you know, how does this corner make me feel? Or how does my kitchen make me feel? And once you do that, I mean, I like starting with the kitchen because it's kind of a neutral-ish zone. Mm-hmm. And even the fridge is a nice place to start to declutter and because you need nutrients coming into your body to be well as you get off alcohol, cleaning out your old food and your old stuff in the pantry and starting and literally physically cleaning the inside of the fridge, the outside of the fridge. It's the beginning process of letting your body know you're planning to be well, and this is how we're doing it. It's an ongoing process, Cassie. It's not going to happen overnight. At least for me, it hasn't. I literally am still giving away books to Goodwill. I took a whole bunch of books. This is in my library here from my library to the library in Savannah where I live now. And they were thrilled. It's a small library, but they don't have a lot of books there. I'm like, where are your books? I have a whole lot I can give you. So it felt good. It felt good for me to get rid of things. Although I love books, I do want to declutter. And, you know, it's powerful. Once you just take a corner of your room and begin the process, you're going to feel less stressed. You're going to feel pretty good. I don't know if you've had that experience since COVID has been kind of behind us, sort of. I've had a chance to declutter a little bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've been decluttering basically since January. I've done it a couple of times since COVID and being home, but like specifically my husband and I, my closet, like the handle broke or the bar broke. And I was like, okay, we're going to stay here. We're going to go through. And I ended up getting rid of, no joke, like 6 bags of clothes. And I, one, didn't realize I could even fit that many clothes in my room. And then to like get rid of it felt really good. And I do like your idea of starting in the kitchen too, especially when you're trying to not drink as much or drink less, because that's where you obviously go to get the drink, right? You go into the kitchen, and if you're surrounded by clutter, I could see that signaling a part of your brain to, you know, pour a drink and then ignore the clutter, you know, and step away from it. So I really like that. So I'm constantly, I love decluttering. I think books are a big thing, obviously, like you said. I think I just got rid of like 70 books. And right. I know I'll recollect them, but I have to make room for them. So I'm trying to do a little bit of give and take. Like if I'm going to acquire more shirts, I need to get rid of some shirts instead of sort of hoarding them all.
Exactly. And the same thing with things in your, you know, the bedroom where you have extra towels that you haven't used, or in the, they're in the back of the closet or things like that. There's animal shelters that use those towels. So I do, a big fan of giving, you know, moving, cycling things through that are still in decent condition, but can be used by someone else or animals. And I'm a big animal lover. So I've many times I've taken a bunch of towels to my local animal shelter, and it feels really good. So, you know, these are little things you can do that make you feel good.
Yeah, and it's like a little bit of serotonin there as well. Like, I love that. I never thought to donate towels to an animal shelter. I'm a big animal girl myself, so I'll have to do that as well.
Great.
In your book, I'm going to quote you to you a little bit. In your book, you write, "The first skill, and possibly the hardest at the beginning of not drinking, is to be honest with the people in your life." Why is this, and why do you recommend this as a first step?
Yes. Honesty. Ooh, this is a tough one. Well, here, Cassie, we're talking about communication skills. And when you're drinking, there's not a ton of communication skills going on. You start getting buzzed, or you start feeling loose, and all the honest communication may not be happening. But when you decrease or totally eliminate drinking, your relationships are going to change somewhat. So you do need some new skills to be able to interact with your friends and family. And being honest with your friends and family is going to have a positive impact. Although it may feel awkward at first, it's going to actually help you realign and get grounded with who you are and what you're doing right now. And you could, there's some phrases I have in the book that you can say specifically to your friends and family about what's going on for you. And they're, you know, phrases like, "This is where I am right now in my life. I'm hoping you can support me. I'm not drinking right now. I feel good. I feel hopeful." And see how it goes. I mean, and there's going to be times when you're going to have different kinds of friends. Either the friends you were drinking with may not be the same friends that you are with as you go to this next chapter. And the and people that you didn't even think were going to be your friends, maybe other non-drinking moms or whatever, not non-drinking friends, they now could fill that gap and become really good friends because there's an honesty that goes back and forth. So that first step, honesty, is important. I do like the second and third step that I talk about. The second step is, in terms of communication skills, how to offer open-ended questions. So when you're interacting with people, you leave the room and the space available to have an honest conversation and not sort of dampen it down very quickly with, you know, defensiveness or whatever, negativity or whatever happens, to try to really have an open-ended environment. And the third step, one of my favorites, is express empathy. Realize that your friends are also going through something as you stop drinking. Your friends are also going to be going through something. So you have empathy for them, like, "Oh, this must be tough for you that I'm changing. Let's see if we can talk about this, and let's see if we can come to a meeting in the middle and keep our relationship strong." So it's kind of fun to be able to have these good communication skills. It's kind of a it's a new way to be, and it's I would say just be curious about, you know, your how you're being honest with yourself and see how it feels, see how it kind of vibes and resonates with you. Yeah, that's how I'm thinking about that honesty with other people thing.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it does require you to be honest with yourself. I think, like I mentioned, I've never been a huge drinker, but in my early 20s, I drank a lot more. And what I would notice when I would drink too much is that I felt overly emotional, like during those times. And what would happen is I would shame myself in the morning. I'm like, "What? Like, you cried, like you were upset." And I found that, like, I was just so mean to myself that it just was never worth it. Like, and none of my friends took it out on me or anything, but I was just so mean to myself.
That's rough. I do think that does happen a lot. People get super emotional, vulnerable, which is, you know, not a bad thing. But if we can take that emotionality and vulnerability and move it into a kind of a sober environment and see what happens, I think it'd be pretty interesting to see what does happen with that vulnerability. I do think it's not a bad thing, you know, to be emotional and vulnerable and, you know, just kind of reflect on what those parts of you are trying to tell you know. So I not a bad thing.
Well, it gives you the opportunity to be vulnerable with other people when you're in a sober environment versus when, you know, people are trying to have a party and you're suddenly upset. Like, it's not the environment where you know, those emotions are going to be received mm-hmm. in like a compassionate way either. So I like that what you're asking here is to bring that vulnerability to a sober state. And I feel like that gives a better opportunity for connection with people.
Absolutely. 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. I think having that honest, vulnerable interaction with someone else who's currently either not drinking or is kind of, you know, supportive of you can really make the difference about your journey and going forward and how you're interacting with people. I do think that's gold if you can get that.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Daniel Fox, author of the Borderline Personality Disorder Workbook. When you first are diagnosed with BPD, or you're first told that you may have borderline personality disorder, it can be very frightening and overwhelming. Because we have these ideas of what this disorder is, and you can feel trapped within it, trapped within this view or perspective of this thing that feels bigger than you and bigger than life. But the reality is that this is a disorder that can be managed, and that learning adaptive strategies can help you control it and do your life differently so that you determine the course of your life, not your BPD. To learn more and to sign up, go to bpdcourse.com.
Once you stop drinking, I think you start to notice how many activities involve drinking. Like even just last night, I went to a new book club that like I wanted to meet more people in my area. And like the drinks on the table were wine. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go grab a soda. But like just every little thing, we have made it so it's a drinking activity. What are some ways that you can find activities outside of drinking that are fun for you?
Yeah, I do think you're right. Everything includes drinking, even television shows. Yeah. You're going like, I'm just rewatching, you know, Madam Secretary or whatever the show is. And everybody's at the end of the day, oh my God, what a day. Whoo, let's get the scotch. And and so any commercials, I mean, even my husband is watching March Madness, and every single commercial is a beer commercial at a bar. And it's funny, I guess. I mean, not funny. It's like, wait a second. Yeah. Is there something else besides alcohol that we can kind of sell during these college games? But anyway, so the way to take to figure out what you can do that doesn't include drinking is going to take a little bit of work, Cassie. I think because you're right, your book clubs, I went to an event also that was alcohol was the first thing. People had drinks in their hands immediately, and they don't have alternate drinks at the table, you know. So it's very, I don't know how you handled your book club, but there was not an alternative unless you created one for yourself,
right?
So for the book club or for some of the events I've been to, I either bring my own non-alcoholic drinks and share them, you know, with other people there who may not want to drink, or I choose not to drink at that time. So I don't know how you handled, did you do anything different at the book club, or how do you?
The last person to arrive actually brought soda. So I was like, oh, great. So I was originally just going to be like, oh, can I grab some water? Because it was at this woman's house. But then somebody brought another drink in, and I was like, okay. And then I did notice once that was available, a lot more people chose to do that versus the wine. But I love the idea of bringing your own.
You have to. I mean, it's a non-negotiable, unfortunately. And the cool thing is there's a lot of good either non-alcoholic drinks out there now, or there's a lot of fun, just regular soda type drinks that you can bring that are different and have flavor. And, you know, I think you have to kind of, you just have to have that and take it with you and even have it in the car, whatever it is to do the activity. But I think to answer your question about other activities that don't include drinking, the way I'm thinking about it, I have to figure out what I did before I was drinking. I mean, what are the things that were fun for me? And a lot of those are creative endeavors, like arts and art classes and things like that were fun, going to museums, or what interested me before the alcohol came on board. And I think we're all kind of fun kids. I mean, if you ever look at a picture of yourself when you're a kid and you're thinking, God, that's a fun kid. It's like, so cute and so fun and just having a good time and interacting and playing Monopoly with the other kids or whatever the thing is. Underneath the alcohol, there's a fun person that can interact with people in a fun way. And we just have to figure out for each of us what that is. So we have to figure out what interested me before the drinking started. When did I feel most joyful and playful? And you may need to go back in time and say, well, that was when I was 15, or that was when I was 12, or I did this, and I, you know, that was fun. Asking a friend who is not drinking what they do for fun is very helpful. I've gotten some really good ideas from people who are not drinking, like, what are you doing for fun these days? And book clubs should be fun. I mean, I think that's a great idea, but I don't know if there's a way to get them without wine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but, you know, so I do think just leaning back, and that's what that meditation and that mindfulness you mentioned earlier, when you have a moment of mindfulness, it's like, huh, what was fun for me before I was drinking wine with my friends or what have you? And really, the other piece of the book that I really kind of put a lot of heart and soul in is nature. I do think getting out in nature is an activity, a non-alcoholic activity that you can do with your friends or family that is very healing, and you can be present. And it's something that you did as a kid probably. And, you know, I know I did in living in New York, went to the Bronx Zoo a lot and went to the botanical gardens a lot and the aquarium and, you know, things that, you know, are cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And fun that maybe we haven't done in a while.
I think those things that you're mentioning too, for me, are really applicable to my phone use as well, because I found myself probably, I think in 2021, when the world started like opening back, I tried to find some activities that would be good for me. One, to get out of the house. Two, to like get away from my phone. And I found that something like a creative, like I went to a lot of pottery classes because I literally couldn't touch my phone with my hands covered in clay. And like being in nature, like I was so engaged in my setting that I didn't want to pick up my phone. And so I found that that was really powerful too. And I think that really can help people who are trying to find that natural buzz, if you will, that they were like seeking with alcohol. They can get by like going on a nice walk or like putting your hands in some clay. And I love that.
And putting your hands in some dirt. I'm a big fan right now. I'm obsessed with indoor plants, and, you know, to repot your plants and to take care of them, or you're gardening outside or even out the front door, if you have a little spot there, that is very, no phone use at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really just all you and re-engaging with nature. And it is incredibly healing. So I like that idea.
Yeah. I love plants. I got way more into them during COVID too, when I've been home, because I'm like, I want to be surrounded, and I have a cat who likes to munch on them. So I had to keep them in my office, but I was like researching cat safe ones in case he does eat it. And now I have like a ton. In your book, you talk about a cycle. You say you may recognize the cycle. You drink alcohol to deal with stress or to try to relax, and drinking impacts your sleep. Poor sleep and not feeling well may lead you to drink more, and drinking more impacts your food choices. I think that just really summed it up. What are some ways to break that cycle that can get to be sort of in this automatic state?
Yeah, that's fantastic, because we all get in these weird cycles and you don't realize your sleep is impacted by drinking. Mm-hmm. You kind of know, but then you kind of forget, you know? So it's, the book talks a lot about, and I think you and I can unpack this a little bit more, but reconnecting with food that feeds your well-being is really important in this phase. So nutrition is very important in terms of taking alcohol out, which we all know alcohol is a sugar, unnecessary sugar. I mean, it's fermented. Fruits and vegetables turns into alcohol, and it's delicious, I guess, until it's not anymore. But being able to take that sugar out of your diet and figuring out what foods we can put back in, just the fruits and vegetables without, you know, it being alcohol related. Planning your meals is really important. I was terrible at this until recently. Literally, I just never did it. I just didn't plan anything. I just went to the store and hoped for the best and came home with a chicken, and then that was that. So literally, and I was freaking out because I was like, I'm eating way too much of this chicken stuff. So planning meals is really important, and adding vegetarian options, I think, will help you deal with the stress of the cycle. And slowing down, I think, even when you plan a vegetarian meal, it takes a minute to get the recipe, get the ingredients at the store, get your kitchen in order, make the meal, sit down and enjoy the meal. That breaks the cycle of, you know, continually to drink and have your sleep impacted and then have the whole thing start over again. So like we talked about at the beginning, slowing down, having that mindful time with yourself or with your partner is really helpful in breaking a cycle. I mean, most of us have these cycles that are automatic pilot. We just go, go, go and do it. And I was definitely on that train for a long time, but I'm realizing now that the way to improve my sleep along with not drinking is to slow down eating, slow down making decisions, and just take care of myself in a kind of a different way.
Mm-hmm. A lot less avoidance.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
One thing that I love a fun beverage. Like that would be sort of, I love the feeling of holding a glass of something I made in my hand or like holding a glass of wine. What are some ways to sort of have fun without alcohol in what you're drinking and what you're eating?
Yeah, there's a couple kind of fun tricks of the trade on this one. I do think that if you're going out to eat with friends, I do recommend you plan ahead, look at the restaurant online, look at their menu, look at their cocktail bar, see if they have mocktails. Most bartenders can turn a cocktail into a mocktail. So you can have a non-alcoholic Bloody Mary, for example, Virgin Mary, whatever it is called. And you can actually begin the process of turning alcoholic drinks that you used to love into non-alcoholic drinks. So that's if you're going out. And actually, there's a website, I think it's still up and running, called Sober Bars Near Me. So if you're going out just to a bar, because that's what you like to do, there's a bunch of sober bars in bigger cities and some in smaller cities that you can find online, putting in your zip code and seeing what's local. And they have no alcohol or low alcohol drinks. Mm. And I do think planning in advance, if you're just going out to, you just like going out to bars, but you want to not drink kind of vibe, you know, as you transition to figuring out what's next for yourself, that's not a bad idea. Silverbarsnearme.com. And I looked it up a minute ago, and I do think everything is up and running on that website. So give it a try. At home though, Cassie, this is where it gets kind of fun, because if, you know, a lot of us are home in the evenings, maybe we don't want to go out. And I'm a big fan of upgrading your home bar to make it more mocktail happy and mocktail curious. So I, for one, have a bunch of non-alcoholic mixers, and I have this product called seedlipdrinks.com. It's an elixir, but it's no alcohol in it and it's no sugar in it. And you mix it with, you know, whatever you want to mix it with, a non-alcoholic mixer. So I've upgraded my bar to make it fun. So when friends come over, I give them a mocktail and they are like, huh, this tastes pretty good. I'm like, mm-hmm. And they're like, they bring wine over. I'm like, wait, we don't drink wine, but you can. And then I start them out with the mocktail, and then they're like, you know, I'll have another one of those mocktail things. And I call it a cocktail. I think it's kind of, you don't have to call it a mocktail. Mm-hmm. You can call it a cocktail. So,
yeah.
And I think that kind of helps ease the, you know, the pressure of drinking or not drinking. And then I like to bring out my good stuff. I bring out my good wine glasses. I have a bunch. I bring out my good cocktail glasses. I have fun things around the non-alcoholic drink to make it a fun environment, just as fun as if you are drinking. So it's up to you. You can get, you know, fun glasses at places like Goodwill or on, you know, online on Amazon, whatever. And I do think you can kind of create a beautiful non-alcoholic place in your house that is super fun. Of course, as you probably know, there's non-alcoholic beer and wine these days. I don't know if you've tried those yet. I've tried the beer once when I was going out. It's very good, actually, and non-alcoholic beer. So that's another way to up your home bar if you are having people over that are nervous about not drinking, let them try a zero alcohol beer and ask them, say you're collecting data and ask them what it tastes like and see if you can make it fun and make it enjoyable, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I've been experimenting a bit with mocktails, and I don't know if you've heard of this one that was kind of going viral on social media called the Sleepy Girl Mocktail. It was tart cherry juice, which apparently has some natural melatonin in it. And then you put in your magnesium and then top it off with like a sparkling water, and you put it in a wine glass, and it's really good. It looks almost like having a red wine, and I've been enjoying it. And then it has good sleep benefits as well versus having a glass of wine, which interrupts your sleep even after one.
What a great idea. Yes, that is a great idea. It sounds like a nice recipe to enjoy the evening.
So. Yeah. We talked a bit before about sort of that honesty with other people in our life about, you know, the journey we're taking. But why is mutual support so important in this?
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have, that sometimes your friends, it might feel like a one-way street. In other words, you're giving a lot and that's cool. You're supporting them, you're cheerleading them. Everything is great as long as it's, you know, you giving. And I have found that sometimes I'm not getting back what I need, especially as I make a habit change like we're talking about today. So if I make a habit change, like not drinking, and my friends are like, oh, that's good for you, see you later, that's not mutual support. So when we talk about mutual support, it's the idea of rebuilding your old friendships, your new friendships, the ones that feel like there's a give and take. In other words, you feel supported when you're going through a rough time, you support them when they're going through a rough time or a fun time. And so you feel comfortable giving and receiving, and that makes you, that elevates your mood. It elevates your decision-making. It makes you feel, you know, just held and supported. I really think as you quit drinking, you will need to have that mutual support. And it could just be one person. It's okay if you just have one cool friend that you have that back and forth experience with. It doesn't have to be everybody. But for your relationships to thrive, you're going to need to have that ability to determine which are the friends that are going to give you support and which are the friends that maybe don't have the capacity right now for whatever reason. And that's okay. I mean, there's no harm, no foul. We just want to make sure as you make a behavior change, your friends will need to come along with you a little bit.
Yeah, it does make it easier. For me, my husband actually stopped drinking before I did. He hasn't drank in, you know, like a year and a half. And while he was going through that, I was totally supportive. Like, I made sure where we went had options for him. And honestly, it made it so much easier when I stopped drinking because I already knew I had that support system. So like, there's no temptation to drink when we're with each other because we know we're both not interested. Mm-hmm. So that like definitely can be really powerful and helpful.
Yeah, I went to France for 2 weeks. And you know, the wine in France is fabulous. I hear. I didn't drink for 2 weeks in France, and everyone was looking at me like I was just insane because the wine is, that's what they're known for. I understand it. But luckily my husband was not drinking also. And so we had that mutual support of being in a beautiful country and doing something a little different. And so I totally get that you really do need to have, especially if you're with a partner, just to have that extra special, you know, connection of like, this is what we're doing tonight. We're going to have a beautiful dinner and the waiter's going to look at us like we're crazy, but we're actually not going to order wine in France. So so I like the idea of having that spouse or partner support that makes it even better.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least even if you're not drinking the wine in France, their food is phenomenal.
Yes, so I figured out. Yes, I mean the cheese and the bread and the things that in the United States were like, no bread, no cheese. Over there, it tastes totally different.
Exactly.
Even the pastries.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different thing.
My husband and I went on our honeymoon in Paris, and literally every time we passed a boulange, I was like, give me a baguette. Like, let's go.
Let's do this. Yeah, absolutely.
Too good. Rebecca, that feels like a good place to wrap up unless you have any final thoughts for the listeners.
I would say for the listeners and just to remind all of us that as you are making healthy decisions by taking a break from alcohol, be kind to yourself and take small, simple steps. It doesn't have to be 0 to 60. It can just be today is today. And we're just going to see how we do with our behavior changes this evening at dinner, see how we feel the next morning with a good night's sleep, and continue just to build one healthy decision onto the next. And you're going to do great. I mean, I'm proud of you guys, all of you. So good.
Thank you so much. And thanks for your book. It really makes it feel totally accessible, like breaking it down, like you said, into small steps. So I really appreciate your work on this. And I know a lot of people will get a lot of help from this.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I appreciate you having me on your show. Have a great afternoon.
Soothe stress, unwind, and feel more joyful without a cocktail, beer, or glass of wine. Are you tired of hangovers? Do you wish you could think more clearly during the day or feel less anxious at night? Are you curious about that hashtag sober life? Many of us want to cut back on our drinking or even stop altogether. But in a culture that glamorizes the cocktail hour, white wine playdates, and boozy brunches, you might wonder, what would I do instead? If you're ready for a change, this go-to guide has the answer. Simple Ways to Unwind Without Alcohol offers surprisingly simple lifestyle skills grounded in mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy, and acceptance and commitment therapy to help you de-stress, reclaim your calm, and feel more vibrant in your day-to-day life without alcohol. If you're stuck in a drinking rut and in need of a wellness reset, you'll love how empowered and energetic you'll feel when you reach for this book instead of a drink. Try it for a week, a month, a year, and maybe more. Visit our website at www.newharbinger.com and use coupon code PODCAST25 to receive 25% off your entire order. New Harbinger Publications is an independent, employee-owned publisher of books on psychology, health, spirituality, and personal growth. For over 50 years, our evidence-based self-help books and pioneering workbooks have helped readers make positive changes to improve mental health and well-being. Founded by psychologists Matthew McKay and Patrick Fanning, New Harbinger is proud to be an employee-owned company. Our books reflect our core values of integrity, sustainability, compassion, and trust. Written by leaders in the field and recommended by therapists worldwide, New Harbinger books are practical, accessible, and provide real tools for real change. The best continuing education training does more than just fulfill requirements. It opens your mind to new possibilities, increases your confidence, and gives you powerful tools to transform your clients' lives. Praxis Continuing Education and Training partners with world-class experts to create cutting-edge, evidence-based courses for mental and behavioral health professionals. Learn how to heal trauma with Robin Walzer, explore values with Kelly Wilson, and master the basics of acceptance and commitment therapy with Matt Boone through an on-demand course. Or join experts and like-minded professionals live to take your practice to a new level. Find your next training opportunity at praxisCET.com. That's praxisCET.com. Do you have an idea for another episode? Do you want to send us a message? Our email address is podcast@newharbinger.com. We'd love to hear from you. This podcast was edited by Jesse Fancushion. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love if you rated, reviewed, and subscribed to the show, and we hope that you might share it with anyone who could benefit from the content. This podcast is not a substitute for counseling with a licensed provider.